Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ham.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Which was the worst loss for the White Sox? The bat flip game versus Kansas City or yesterday's disaster in Detroit?
I would honestly say that our friend Danny Parkins got it right in the first segment, which is that we don't really look at wins and losses with this White Sox team. I am content if Tim Anderson's playing well, if Moncada's playing well, if Aloy hits a home run. These are things that make me happy.
Mully's happy.
I thought the bat flip game was a worse loss because Moncada got knocked out of it, Giolito got hurt, and of course, Tim Anderson getting thrown out of the game. But yesterday, it's inexcusable to lose that game because you had come back and because they were kicking the ball all over the place. They had, what, four or five errors, and that's a team that had lost five in a row. Come on, finish it.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Will the Cubs be 500 or above when you all get back to work on Monday?
I will cautiously say yes, that they will win the series against the Diamondbacks. In a weird way, after listening to Jed Hoyer with you guys yesterday, of the starters, I'm most worried or unsure about today's starter, Kyle Hendricks, because Jed was like,
when he gets off of his mechanics, sometimes it takes him a little bit of time to figure out exactly what's going on.
Which suggests that if you're taking him literally, that he's so off in his mechanics that he won't snap back in just one start. Darvish has been getting incrementally better, and Quintana is finally pitching like the guy that they traded for. They've got the second best run differential in the NL, the Cubs do, even after the awful start. I think they're the better team. I think they'll win the series, and they'll be 500 on Monday.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw on The Score, and Danny Parkin sitting in this morning. You can hear Danny in the afternoon, as you well know, and I'm sure you do. And it's very kind of you to get up and come in, Danny. I really appreciate it.
I was really honored to be asked, Mully. We've never worked together. I appreciate you.
I'm feeling a little bit emotional about this. We've never worked together. That's something else.
We're coming together.
Here it is.
We're a team.
We're all the whole team. The whole
just listen
team
to the guy sitting right next to you in the studio, Mully. Person.
There you go. That's all you got to do. Zach is called the ginger-haired genius for a reason, and he'll be on at 12:45.
Don't mess with the coom dog.
And the coom dog we'll talk to a little bit later in the program as
I
well.
I love the coom dog.
He is one of God's great men. Is it the Buddhists that believe there are like 50 men working behind the scenes for all of humanity?
That sounds right.
Brian Coomer, one of them. I don't know what religion it is, but breaking whatever news. One it is, the Coom Dog is working for the good of humanity.
One of the 50.
One of 50 men. That's not a lot.
No.
I mean,
that's an influential
God.
Man.
It's a guy getting a lot of work done.
Yes, it is.
That's superhero stuff. Let's get out to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Brian wants to talk. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy Friday. Goldschmidt, not on the Diamondbacks, equals Cubs will be above 500 come Monday morning, and I'm happy to face the Diamondbacks and not see him play.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Unfortunately, he's moved to the Cardinals, and you'll play them a lot more this year than you will the Diamondbacks.
Right, just wait May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. You'll get your full fill of Paul Goldschmidt.
But really, to make the big leap, don't you just have to get back to the starting point? And that's what you're looking for here. Two out of three ain't bad. You had to win all three down in Miami. It was just essential. It'd be great if you could win all three here. But two out of three gets you to 500. You feel better about life and you restart things.
Well, I was at the press conference before opening day. Mm-hmm. So that was not that long ago, the home opener. So that was Monday, April 8th, and they were 2-7. And Joe said, you know, you can't make it all up at once. He said his goal is, you know, you make up a game a week and you'd be in good shape. So that would have been, if that would have been their, what they accomplished just to get back to 500,
right.
That's 5 weeks. They have a chance to be at 500 12 days later. I think everybody would take that.
Yeah, I think everyone expected it, though. I think Joe is right. When you start looking at the standings at the end of the year, and I know people are peaking now, which is silly. Don't do it. Resist reading the standings and watching them right now. It's just too early. But when you get to the end of the year, that's when you do that math where you're like, okay, they're four back. You can, in a month, you can pick up a game a week. That's when that
October
really
starts
in
March.
And unfortunately, October starts in March, and here we are, hopefully before May, and you'll be back to a new start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the worst losing streak that they have all year has already happened.
That's fair enough, yeah.
You know, and then you go from there.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, I think it's interesting that Leicester's out, and the schedule has played out to a point where you can go with the four-man rotation with the off day, with the weather game. That really helps, and hopefully everybody continues to pitch the way they have. We just haven't seen Kyle Hendricks do it, and that's why he is so essential today.
Yeah, listen, Kyle Hendricks, they need him because he should be consistent and he should be their guy. And I really think at some point he's supposed to be the ace of the staff. Like, that's what they paid for, and he has that ability. So I don't know if it'll happen today or next start. I'm not worried about him big picture, but some of the guys that I was most confident in before the year, the guys who were supposed to be the most consistent.
I thought Bryant was going to go nuts this year. I really did. I thought he was healthy.
And I just, thinking back, right, if I would have made a top five, like top five Cubs I'm most sure of, Bryant, Hendricks, Rizzo might have been 1, 2, 3. And none of them are right.
Baez.
Baez, I thought he was a prime regression candidate.
Really? That's interesting.
Well, he swings and misses so much.
You know, Yelich is not regressed, and Baez really hasn't regressed.
No.
That race could be on again, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yelich is a freak of nature, but I thought that Baez would be good, obviously. I just thought that last year, you know, that run production seems like it's hard to replicate when you strike out as much, and he's not a big on base percentage guy, but he's making me look like an idiot. He's awesome.
I thought Wilson Contreras was due for a bump, and I expected this season out of him last year, so it doesn't shock me.
Well, he's trying this year, though. He's actually
attempting.
Right. It's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent idea.
I did not see Jason Hayward coming. I am.
How could you?
I am shocked that, you know, the thing about Hayward. He reminds me, this is going to be a stupid comment, so give me a second to explain it.
Nice.
He reminds me of Alfonso Soriano, because I would look at Soriano and I would say, my God, look at the physical presence of that guy. He looks like the world's greatest athlete. He's going to go out. It doesn't matter if he's at second base or in the outfield. Wait till you see his athleticism. He was like, and then he did this little skip thing, and he just never was the defender that he looked like he should have been. And with Hayward, you look at him and you're like, there's an imposing physical presence. He's going to strip his shirt off and charge in to talk to Joe because he needs to be in the lineup at all times. He has the capability of killing the ball, and yet you'd watch him barely get a ball out of the infield.
That's the thing with Hayward. You look at him, and the idea that he doesn't have raw power is insane, and they thought that that's what they were getting. I mean, they signed him when he was after his 26-year-old season, and as a rookie, he hit 27 home runs, and he's never sniffed that since his rookie. I think he was 20 when he had 27 home runs, 20 or 21 when he had the 27 home run season, but he hasn't come close to that.
He hasn't looked capable of it.
I know.
And now when you see him hit with power, you're kind of like, well, where did that come from? And he tried everything. Didn't he go to Arizona right after the year ended, the World Series?
Yeah,
he was 22.
22 when he hit 27 home runs and hasn't sniffed it since. And he's a great athlete. And he still has value, right? He's got leadership value. He has base running value. He has defense value. But if he actually can be a bottom of the order run producer, I just consider that gravy.
Yeah. Well, it makes that contract easier to swallow because, like you, Darvish, you've got to find a reason to love him. You've got to really concentrate on that meeting that he called that won the World Series.
Trust me, I remind myself of it often.
But it's good to have him back.
It's great. And same thing with Contreras, like you mentioned. Let's revisit the Gammons. I'd be interested to see if that holds up the same way that we heard it initially.
The moving around of players, I think sometimes
to get on a long streak, you have to let your basic core players play every day. I think the preparation maybe was something that they at least tried to address together. And I think that you also see, I think maybe a little bit of the, okay, you know, talk everything out. That's one of the things that I think Theo is really good at, is getting people to speak their minds and all be in a, you know, end up in the same place because they all have the freedom to say, I don't like this. I mean, I know from all his years, one thing is very clear to people who work for him is he wants people to say, I don't agree with you. He wants contrary opinion.
Okay, that is Peter Gammons, Hall of Famer, talking about Theo Epstein. And the question that you asked was, what is the philosophical difference between Theo and Joe? We're talking about Joe Maddon and his place here. And to listen to Peter say, moving players around. Now, that is one of Joe's specialties. He likes guys that can do a lot of things. He likes to move the pieces around the chessboard, not just in the field, also in the lineup. And apparently that doesn't go well with Theo. And the other thing is the preparation. I think we got to talk about that a little bit because, again, Peter is a guy that has known Theo forever and understands the inside workings of the Cubs.
He knows Theo very well. It just would really, really surprise me if, given how they built the roster, they have talked so much about their advantage being their positional player depth and their versatility, that they have different lineups for different pitchers, that they have defensive matchups, that they have lineups that can, they can stack righties against a tough lefty, and Rizzo can be the only lefty in the lineup, but then they can put, you know, Zobrist and Happ switch hitters against the tough righty, and they could put a bunch of lefties in the lineup, and they've got defensive replacements and all that. It just would really surprise me if they thought that that was a net negative. Maybe they think that Joe does it too much, but if the versatility and the changeup is a net negative, that would surprise me.
Have they concluded, and we'll get to the break, 312-644-6767 is the number. Have they concluded that in order to develop players, they need to go to the ballpark, be in the same position, be in the same spot in the order, settle in? Is that something that is a missing tangible that the Cubs are not grasping, or Joe doesn't grasp? Is that what this is about? 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Anybody that is not into 2 out of 3 really needs to reevaluate their baseball sensibilities.
Got Danny Parkins joining us this morning, and we have been talking about Joe because Danny has him. He's firing Joe no matter what, I think. God. Or are you letting him leave? I don't know. They're letting him leave as a free agent. I'll put it that way. And asking Peter Gammons about the relationship with Theo is very interesting and something that we probably should do more of and should have done earlier, but you did a great job with that, Danny. And I got to tell you, We have a texter checking in, and is it this simple? Is it simply that Joe's silliness wears on Theo, and that he feels like there isn't enough sense of urgency? I mean, that's why you love Joe and brought him in. That's why you wanted him. You knew part and parcel is getting the you know, weird stuff that goes with it, and it relaxes people, and it makes. And I get it. It only works for a certain amount of time. You know, you don't want to dress up like Batman more than once or twice in your career.
Although it's a good costume. But yeah, I didn't do that more than one Halloween. You want to change it up. I think he knew what he was getting. He's gotten exactly what he paid for. But all good things come to an end. And I think the game has changed in terms of the value of a manager. They saw that the Red Sox could be the best team in baseball last year with Alex Cora as the manager making $800K as a direct extension of the front office. And then you got Joe Maddon making $6 million a year, not as a direct extension of the front office, and maybe doing things that has Theo and Jed pulling their hair out. And it's not that they just want yes men. If they think that as a tactician, Joe is potentially a net negative for them, then they say, okay, they'll move on. And I'm a big actions over words guy, which is ironic given that we work in sports talk radio and it's all about words. But if they wanted Joe,
they would have extended
Joe. If they wanted to empower Joe, they would have kept Jim Hickey his guy or Chili Davis his guy. Iapochi has a tie to the front office. Mark Loretta has a tie to the front office. Who you guys have? Hadavi tie to the front. Those aren't Joe guys. Right. Those are front office guys.
Yeah, and I think the Alex Cora Red Sox thing is interesting to look at because obviously last year best team in baseball, cruised through the playoffs. Everybody loved him. And now this year they're 6-13. They look awful because
he's
they can't
ruined
pitch.
Chris Sale.
And Mookie Betts
Chris
can't Sale. Hit. Is Alex Cora a bad manager now? Like it shows that. Maybe the manager doesn't mean a damn thing like we suspected.
But when Joe was hired, there was this, again, when you started looking into the numbers, a manager meant one or two games difference, okay? That was it. And, you know, as you go through the numbers, you look at that. And yet, when Joe was hired, it seemed like he really did, and we hear this all the time in sports, change the culture of the organization. I mean, he really did. He really had a massive effect on those young guys. Now, the talent was coming up. Maybe anybody could have done that. Maybe it was just the timing of the players. But it seemed like Joe made a huge difference when he first got here.
Again, I agree. And I think Joe has been great. And it's not even that I would necessarily do this. I just thought...
You're looking at them.
Yeah,
yes.
The moment they did not extend Joe Maddon, they've set themselves up for this speculation. And to me, more so than any billboard or slogan of October starts in March or any press conference, that action is what led to a sense of urgency this year. Oh, my God. A hitting coach and a pitching coach got fired after one year.
Crazy.
Joe Maddon has no job security after being the winningest manager in baseball. So I think it's very likely that they will part ways after this year. But to Peter Gammons' point about moving guys around, I fundamentally believe that Theo and Jed believe in versatility. A texter pointed out that they signed Daniel Descalso.
Yes.
Right? They love Ben Zobrist.
Right. But maybe with their young players in particular, they want them. I mean, look, did Joe ruin Kyle Schwarber by thinking he could lead off? Stupid as that sounds, Kyle Schwarber was in a different role.
Right.
He had to go back down to the minors. Have we seen Kyle Schwarber yet this year be the guy? I know it's a couple years removed from it, but these are
also
things.
Also tore his knee.
You know, but Danny, he tore his knee, came back and won a World Series, right? He was huge in that. Joe, if you really follow the narrative, Joe comes in. As I said, I thought he made a huge impact. Obviously, they get to that point. Then you get to the World Series. And people that are Cub fans I've known forever finally win a World Series, and they come out of it like, Joe nearly killed us. God, that guy. His reputation was ruined by winning the World Series, and it's been different since then in terms of the way you think of Joe.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'll admit myself, I wouldn't say ruined, but I would certainly say tarnished. It's hard to have a reputation go down after winning a World Series, but that is what happened to Joe, not only in that series, but how he handled it.
Right.
Right. How he would not even just go out and say, hey, you know what? I messed up. My players bailed me out. I don't even think it would be a story if he would have said that, but he never said it.
And Dustin writes here, he may have ruined Morrow.
Like Joe said, sometimes it's about getting guys in the right places.
And I got to tell you, that is that the Morrow thing really, really bothers the front office because
he used
him three straight times, and then that was the end of it. And they had like a firm idea of how they wanted to use him, and it didn't include three straight appearances.
No, the Morrow thing was bad. The Strope thing was bad. But to your point of Schwarber, they're in win-now mode. I mean, that's why Happ's in Iowa. They're not worried about developing Ian Happ.
That's a good point.
They're worried
about winning right
now.
You can actually argue, guys, that a lot of the young Cubs have regressed since the World Series. You could very easily make that argument. Outside of Javier Baez, find me one that hasn't.
Well, I mean, who do you view right now, one of the core players, on the uptick, right? Maybe Wilson Contreras because of the way he started the season, but he took a step back last year. Definitely Javi. I don't know if there's anybody else.
No, I mean, you can't. I mean, and if you would have said, and this is why it's so, you know, interesting to watch young players like Yoan Moncada come out and Tim Anderson come out on the other side of town this year and be red hot, because Sox fans were ready to give up on both of those guys after last year. But you know, but same with Javi. He had such a cold start to his career, and he was swinging all over the place. And now he's an MVP candidate. It was a runner-up last year, and look what he's doing this year. While your existing MVP doesn't seem to know what he's doing.
All right, we're going to play the Gammas audio for Gordon Whitmire next. We'll get his reaction to it, and we'll do that after we hear from Michael with a scoreboard update.
Cubs win.
Gordon Whitmire taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse.
Cubs win.
The Chicago Sun-Times. Gordon Whitmire.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. We've got Danny Parkins kind enough to sit in this morning. And Gordon Whitmire joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Gordon. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing great. How are you?
Got to love an off day, huh? It helps the pitching and it helps the beat writers. It's good help for everyone.
Yeah, help me for sure. We'll see about the team.
You won the off day.
So, Gordon, we spoke to Peter Gammons earlier in the program, and Danny has a theory that Joe is probably gone no matter what, even if they win the World Series. And he asked Peter about the idea that there is this philosophical difference between Joe and Theo, and here's what Peter Gammons had to say.
What main core philosophical differences do you think exist between Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon?
I think one is the moving around of players. I think sometimes to get on a long streak, you have to let your basic core players play every day. I think the preparation maybe was something that they at least tried to address together. And I think that you also see, I think, maybe a little bit of talk everything out. It's one of the things that I think Theo is really good at, is getting people to speak their minds and all be in this, end up in the same place, because they all have the freedom to say, I don't like this. I mean, I know from all his years, one thing is very clear to people who work for him is he wants people to say, I don't agree with you. He wants contrary opinion.
It's interesting, Gordon, because obviously Peter has a close relationship with Theo, and I find it fascinating, the idea of moving players around and the preparation are the issues. Do you see that? Do you agree with that?
Nope, not at all. I think that while I think that there might be some philosophical differences in that regard, and maybe some of them eventually will contribute to a decision that means Joe isn't there anymore at the end of the year. But that has also been one of their strengths. Some of the differences that they've got, look, not only the moving around players, and I've said it from the beginning, too bad, player doesn't like it or whatever, too bad. They've had plenty of winning streaks. They've had more winning streaks and losing streaks with Maddon. And part of it is how he uses players. And part of it is not necessarily giving players the lineup 3 days in advance. I think that can be a weakness, and I think we already saw an example of how and why that can be a weakness. In Atlanta, when Zagunas was scheduled to make two starts, and he was given, they all were. I mean, they were given the lineup, not the lineup one through nine, but the lineup, you're going to be in the lineup, you're going to be playing this position before that series ever started. Game one of that series, which wound up being their third straight loss, which wound up being a 6-error, 8-0 loss, he set the tone for the whole thing. He was a deer in the headlights much of that game, and it might have been a great place to maybe say, okay, let's restart you here a little bit. Maybe you don't play that third game of the series like we have you scheduled, and then we'll pick it up again next time around. Instead, he'd already been told he's going to play those two games of the series, and now you're kind of stuck, because now if you take him out, that he's already got a hit on that first game. Now you're going to say it's a vote of no faith if you take him out of the lineup for that third game. He wouldn't have known it otherwise, but you've given him the lineup 3 days in advance. So that's a downside to changing the way Joe does things. And that's only one example. The other thing is this urgency stuff that we keep hearing about. One of the ways Joe's always managed is like a lot of managers, he does it his own way, but almost every manager kind of takes a slower approach into the season in terms of shaking things out. Even if you think you know your personnel, there are certain position areas, bullpen's one of them, where you wait and see how it works and whether the roles are going to stand up the way you think they will a month, 6 weeks into the season. Then you start making your changes. Then by mid-season, you have kind of the team you want. And in Joe's case, by about end of July, 1st of August, you start hitting the accelerator. Now you get your regulars get fewer days off. All your best players are playing the most. You use your starters and your relievers differently. We saw that his first season against the Giants in that August series, and they were the best team in baseball the last 2 months of the season. It works. It's a way that he does it. It's a way that his managing works, and you can't if. I think they would be fools to come in and say, well, we don't like it that way. We're not going to do it that way. We're going to switch managers. I mean, be careful what you wish for, because you might find something that it perfectly aligns with your philosophy, and you wind up a 78-win ball club.
Would you bet on Joe Maddon, Gordon Whitmire, being the opening day manager of the Cubs next year?
Well, if it was my decision, I'd bet on him. At this point, I think it's probably a 50-50 proposition for two big reasons. We don't know what this team's going to look like at the end of the year, and consequently, how they're going to view their window for the next 2 to 3 years. And if they view it without it being entirely an optimistic upside window, then they can retool a lot of things. And if you're retooling, then you look not at whether he's a good manager or not, not at whether you like him as your manager, but whether you're willing to pay anybody $6 million for a team that's going to retool for a couple of years. So those are the two factors.
We're closing in. It's still a ways away, another week before we'll see the minor league stint begin with Addison Russell, but that will eventually be a decision they have to make. Does he come back?
I think that decision's made.
Okay, and he's coming back. Is he the shortstop? What happens to the platoon, including Descalso?
Yeah, there is none then. He comes back as the shortstop. If anything, if he comes back, look, he looked on the baseball field. He looked terrific in spring training. If that's the case, then he slots right back in and he plays every day as usual. And if that's the case, then Javi's every day at second. Barring some switching around like we saw last year where Hobbs moves over to third, you get Bodie in a game, you get Descalzo in a game. So those guys become more bench players than platoon players, depending on what you do at third base and your outfield.
How much does Addison Russell need to hit? Like when you say every day, you think he's a six-day-a-week starter?
I think if he does, unless he's slumpy, striking out a lot and slumpy. Yeah, he is. Absolutely. He'll be what he's always been. There's no reason to think he won't be healthier than he's been in recent years, just with kind of the downtime and being away from the major league grind of things. And again, as I said, and I don't know if it's, strangely, weirdly, perversely, whatever, because of, sort of a resolution to all this awful off the field stuff and maybe even the therapy. I think that stuff hung on him like a cloud the last couple of years, and it affected his play. And again, in spring training, he just looked like a different hitter. He seemed to square up everything. There's a different sound off his bat. And if that's the way it looks when he comes back, he'll definitely be in there every day.
Okay, so we talk about who's going to come, who's going to break out of the slump, who's going to get better quicker. And obviously they're doing this and they're, one series away from being 500 if they can win it. What's going on with Bryant? Is he okay? Is he healthy? What's going on with Schwarber? Is that who he is? Anthony Rizzo, we always know he gets hot late. It's not an issue, but they're all an issue.
I think that's really interesting that you said we know Anthony Rizzo, we know he's going to be fine, and I don't disagree with you, but how come nobody's saying that about Bryant?
I don't, because he consistently has been better, frankly.
But he's gone through slumps before like this for, you know, similar lengths of time even. And this being a slump isn't even as deep as Rizzo's. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think it's just the health question. I'm with you. I mean, when Bryant's healthy, he produces. When Bryant's healthy, he hits. I think the only question is there a chance, given that he didn't have surgery, that he's not as healthy as they're saying?
That's the only question. In my mind, that's the only question. And he insists that he is, and it's hard to believe that if they don't think he is, that he's playing every day like he is.
Agreed.
I have to believe that. Now, the other side of it physically, remember he came into camp and he said, I did so much work on that shoulder that my left shoulder is actually stronger than my right shoulder. He said something along those lines. Now, maybe a little bit of it was exaggeration, but the extreme strength work that he did in the off season, who knows what it's done to, you know, I'm just going to throw this at this on technical hitting mechanics or anything, but just sort of the equilibrium of his mechanics. Maybe there's some adjustment period that needs to be made. Now, that said, you know, he looked fine in spring training when it came to how he swung the bat and the results he was getting out of it. Looked okay in the season opener. So I suspect that this will sort itself out. And he'll break out on the other side of it. And if he doesn't, then I think we are back to that same what about the shoulder question. Not whether Chris Bryant can hit or not.
Are you projecting a quality start for one Kyle Hendricks this afternoon?
I'm not projecting anything. No. That doesn't mean he won't do it. I mean, he will at some point. We've seen this before. And the thing about him is, it's like you look at him and you say, well, Quintana's going great. Hamels is going great. Darvish, by degrees, seems to be taking baby steps. What the hell's wrong with Kyle Hendricks? And how many times have we said that the last couple of years? And then at the end of the year, or even partway through asking the question, you look up, not right now, but you look up and you say, he's actually doing well, you know, and at the end of the year, he's got, you know, a top five ERA in baseball for his career. So he will figure it out. Maybe it'll be this start. His velocity's okay. You know, if anything, the differential on some of his pitches isn't what he wants right now. And once that happens, then it's lights out. So and that's one of those things that could just come on, you know, in a moment, just turn on a dime. So it could happen this time. But, you know, again, I'm not predicting anything. It'll happen in a moment when it happens. But
don't run to the book.
Yeah.
Gordon, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
That's Gordon Whitmire covering the Chicago Cubs for the Chicago Sun-Times. Interesting stuff from Gordon, as always, and differing opinions are what we're all about. 312-644-6767 is the number. We're going to bring in Ron Coomer next. Coom Dog will join us on the Mullion Haw Show with Danny Parkins.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.